Thanks for being patient with us. Welcome to this evening's meeting. For those that don't know, my name's Tony Dowling. I'm a primary school teacher in Gateshead, and I'm on the committee of Newcastle Stop the War Coalition. This evening's meeting has been called because of the current situation. We all know the sort of epigram that the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over again. But we find ourselves in a situation where, having voted against intervention in Syria last year, our parliament has now taken the step of reverting to what they did 13 years ago and embarking on another foreign war. Not only do I think it's odd that they voted in favour of the war, but actually that they voted so heavily in favour of the war that they're not really reflecting the opinion out here on the streets, albeit might be a minority opinion opposing the war. But we're going to have a talk tonight about the reasons why we oppose the war. I've got a couple of apologies from speakers. Claire Williams, who was the Northern Region Convener for Unison, has had to call off because she's had a migraine this afternoon, so apologies for that. And Abu Tayyab, who was coming down to speak from the Islamic Diversity Centre, he found himself, having agreed to speak a couple of weeks ago when we were first putting this together, he's found himself in Middlesbrough today and he can't get back. We had a replacement, Dipu Ahad, Councillor Ahad, was coming to speak, but he's had to go down to London because he's got a relative who's near to death at the moment, so your thoughts and prayers for him would be much appreciated. However, we have got a couple of excellent speakers with us, and so we'll have lots of time for some good information and plenty of time to discuss the issues. We've got Andrew Murray, who's kindly come up from London. He's the Vice President of the National Stop the War Coalition. Before him, we've got Andy Bowsher, who is the chaplain at Northumbria University, and he's also on the Martin Luther King Peace Committee. Is that at Newcastle University? Or is that the
joint? Both universities.
Both universities. So Andy's going to speak for about 5 minutes or so to kick us off, and then Andrew's going to do about 15 minutes, and then we'll have a bit of discussion. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as you'll have just heard, I'm the coordinating chaplain at Northumbria University. I've been doing that for close on 4 years now. And although I am accustomed to public speaking, I don't think this is actually the first time I think I've addressed a meeting of people who are in some way or shape or form political. I usually address church congregations who I've got a better, I kind of feel I have a better idea of what's going to be on the menu with that in some respects. So bear with me while I find my feet in this new sort of context. As you all just heard as well, I'm one of the coordinating and founding members of the Martin Luther King Peace Committee. It's something that goes across both universities, and it's a Christian based peace forum, if you like, and the name gives you the clue, really. Martin Luther King is well known for his work to do with justice, particularly racial justice. What he's possibly slightly less well known for is the fact that he was quite an advocate of finding justice by non-violent means. Now, some people know that, some people are less aware of that, and was spoke out quite fervently against the Vietnam War, for example. So he has a track record also as a peace activist, and it's that element of his legacy that we in the Martin Luther King Peace Committee are particularly wanting to reference at this time. If you're interested in knowing a bit more about that, then there is a sign-up sheet at the back, actually, for that. It's a separate one to the rest of the things, and some flyers there of a current project that we're doing to do with Christmas truces, which the centenary will be this coming Christmas. So that's kind of by way of a bit of a background and a quick plug for the organisation that has brought me here, in a sense. Of course, as you can tell, I'm bound to be a bit religious, and I will be referencing that from time to time. I hope you'll bear with that, but in a sense, none of us can speak other than from where we find ourselves as human beings. I find myself as a Christian since my teenage years, and that has informed my participation in the peace movement on and off for many, many years. But I'm hoping that what I'll say today will reference values and perspectives that I imagine actually many of us will hold in common. So although I may make references that are kind of Christian, I think most of you will be able to kind of get with the plot, as it were, that I'm developing. When I was asked to speak, it was before the vote that we've just heard referenced in the, Commons, and I was amongst, with some of you here today, at the monument on the eve of that vote, as the debate was beginning to take place that very evening. We were handing out flyers at the monument saying why we felt that it wasn't a good idea if the MP should vote for something that would effectively take us into further conflict in Iraq and possibly Syria on the horizon. And a number of us, myself included, had conversations of varying lengths with some of the passers-by. One of my conversations ended with me saying that I wasn't convinced at all that the proposed action was fully legal, and my conversation partner at that point decided, well, you know, actually, no, it is legal. I mean, and it had been on the news that, yes, the legal opinion had been given that to help out Iraq in this way would be legal. But and I found myself saying, but not fully. And what was what we didn't manage to explore then was the fact that this is that the legal opinion was being given on the basis that the United Nations Charter gives nations the right to self-defense and also the right to ask for aid in that. All well and good. Why would I say not fully legal? Well, the reason being is that it's in the context of the United Nations Charter. Article 2, paragraph 3, talks about whatever actions being taken shouldn't endanger international justice and peace. And it seems to me that the actions that were proposed then are now being taken do precisely that. They further endanger international justice and peace. I can't see, therefore, that even if Iraq help us, that in the context that's being that it's going to play out into, that we can actually say that it doesn't pose a further danger to international justice and peace. And as a Christian, I find myself quite interested in that, because the United Nations Charter at many points in relation to these kind of things actually seems to sit beside just war theory, which is wider than a Christian concept, but it's certainly something that many Christians would say that they support as a way of trying to think morally and ethically about armed conflicts. And I'm concerned because although many of our politicians would like to reference the Christian tradition in a case like this, and I'll say a bit more about that later, the United Nations Charter itself does parallel Christian tradition in this. And I worry that the just war theory that's sort of saying actually actions should be proportionate, they should have a likelihood of success, they should promote justice, and they should enable peace to take place afterwards, that's kind of summary if you like, those things aren't in place in reality. And so the Christian tradition and my reading certainly of the UN Charter at that point would seem to be hand in hand to say actually this is not really something we should be doing. The founder of Christianity said at one point, those who live by the sword will die by the sword. And I think in context, and in the context of his teaching as a whole, we might take that as an observation, if you like, that violence tends to beget violence. And it's the reason why in the Christian tradition there's meant to be a break on going forward with violent options to resolve things, because there's a recognition that actually they're likely to continue to play out violently. That seems to me the problem that we're facing here. That what the British government, what the Americans are doing, what others are potentially involved with here is likely to perpetuate the violence that's taken place. And in fact, it seems to me that the insurgents, ISIL or ISIS or whatever name you want to give them, are counting on this for propaganda purposes. They're counting on collateral damage, which will give them some good pictures to show around the world and fish out the people that might be sympathetic to their cause, to say, this is what they're doing. Come and join us and help fight this evil that is going on. In doing what we're doing as a nation, we're actually feeding them a potential propaganda victory and that will continue to make things worse. That feeds back into the sense that it's not going to help solve anything for international peace and justice. Jesus also said, "Blessed are the peacemakers," and I found myself those words echoing through my mind quite a lot over the last few days and weeks. And it seems to me that if Great Britain was doing something that was like peacemaking, then we would simply stop at this point and recognise that we are part of the problem. And if you're part of the problem, you don't carry on wading in and making things worse. We all know, even with a domestic argument, there's a point when if you stop, you have a chance of picking it up and making some progress. But if you carry on, you just dig yourself further in. And that seems to me that's precisely what we're doing at the moment. But I'm still thinking of that woman that I was talking to at the monument, who said it's legal, and therefore, in a sense, case dusted, we can go and do this. But why would someone want to go in and do this? Well, it seems to me that also conversing with some of the other people at that point, at the monument, one of the things that kept on coming back was the argument, really, that has traction was, we've got to stop this persecution of other people, we've got to stop this barbarity. You can fill in the blanks for all of that kind of thing, but the sense that there's something wicked happening over there, and we've got to stop it. The problem is the first piece of our imagination that's caught by that is the sense that somehow we've got to go in there with military might. It just seems to me that in this country, we've got to the point where, you know that saying, you know, if what you've got is a hammer, everything you look at looks like a nail. If what you've got is an army and military hardware, every international problem looks like that's something you've got to use that on. Instead of having invested our money and our time and our effort in kind of the education that might be necessary to help people think differently about how you might solve international problems, we've continued to invest in the same old, same old. We've not learnt the lessons of the last 20 years. War will not help solve the problem. If we're concerned about the barbarity going on, then it doesn't seem to me that taking actions that are going to reproduce that barbarity, possibly many-fold, because we know from the experience of the last 20 years what is likely to happen. We know that drones aren't 100% accurate. We know there will be what's euphemistically called collateral damage, i.e. people will be killed, people will be maimed, many of them will be supposedly non-combatants, many of them will be relatively innocent, many of them, most of them, will be people who aren't in any way fighting and perhaps have no real stake in the outcome one way or the other, except that they would like peace. We are going to make matters worse. We're going to inflame the situation further. We are risking perpetuating the kind of conflicts that we're trying to address further and further into the future. We need to be finding other ways of dealing with this, and those aren't going to be to do with war. They're going to be to do with education. They're going to be to do with empowering the people on the ground to be able to make their own decisions and to be able to do the things that make sense for them. Part of the problem we are facing, it seems to me, is that, as we'll see, some of you may have walked past at lunchtime the monument. There was a demonstration by people from the Kurdistan, people originally from Kurdistan, and they were demonstrating because they're saying, we don't want Turkey involved in this. Why? Because they're worried that Turkey will use the opportunity to expand their territory. It just illustrates the difficulty there is in this region, that the more you get embroiled, the more difficult and complex it's going to be. But by us getting involved, we're not going to improve that in any way, shape or form. In fact, we're part of the problem in terms of propping up regimes such as the Saudi Arabian regime, and it seems to me that when you look at what they do, where's the justification for going in on the basis of barbarity, for example, when it comes to Syria and Iraq? When you look at what we've done in terms of supporting or not supporting various people in Syria and Iraq itself, then again, who's got the moral upper hand in this this discussion? Certainly we don't. We need to think again about how we are getting involved with it, and probably need to say, actually, we really need not to be involved because we have been making the matters worse. We need to pull back and enable people who can actually solve this to begin to solve it. I'm not going to say any more, actually, because I think that point is well enough made by me. You may want to talk about it later. So I'll stop there and hand over to wherever we're going next. So over to Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you for that interesting introduction. Gives us a bit of food for thought. I like, you know, when you were talking about the army and having an army and everything looks, you know, the hammer and the nail metaphor. That was very interesting. I heard somebody commented today, I was seeing on Facebook, the fact that Britain had sent in the army to Sierra Leone for the Ebola virus, whereas Belgium and Cuba had sent doctors. You know, just seems to be a thing about Britain and armies that we seem to be in that sort of mindset, yeah. You know. But anyway, just before I hand over to Andrew, it's interesting that Andy talked about the fact that we did have a protest on the eve of the vote in Parliament 2 weeks ago. Today we also had a protest at the monument on last Saturday about the war as well, and we're having this meeting tonight because we want to be part of the process that stops war. That's the idea, and as Andy has alluded to, we do think that George Orr, not war, war is a bit of a truism. So, you know, that's the process that we want to be a part of. So on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Andrew,